Welcome everyone to the Antinatalist Advocacy Podcast, where we speak to interesting and knowledgeable people about how best to protect sentient beings from the harms of coming into existence. I'm your host, John, an antinatalist advocate from the UK, and I'll be the main host of the podcast going forward. This is the second episode of our series doing deep dives into our four cause areas: human procreation, animal agriculture, wild animal suffering, and artificial sentience. We kicked things off last time out by speaking with Benedictine the Truth about the ethical arguments against procreating. This month, we wanted to have someone on to discuss the reasons why antinatalists should be concerned about animal agriculture, and we reached out to fellow antinatalist Ash Wickety. Ash is an animal rights activist from the United States. As well as fighting for a better world for animals, she is also involved with Stop Having Kids, the most prominent antinatalist activist organisation in her home city of Minneapolis. She also appeared on our panel at our conference last year, AAC 23, discussing how best to build a healthy antinatalist community. I really enjoyed this wide-ranging conversation with Ash, and we look forward to involving her in future AA initiatives. A little disclaimer before we proceed with today's episode. We know that animal rights and veganism is a controversial subject in the antinatalist community, as it is in society at large. The purpose of this episode was not to shame people who eat animals, although it appears this accusation will be unavoidable. We instead wanted to explore why we believe there is such a strong overlap between antinatalism and veganism, and why, from an antinatalist viewpoint, we are against breeding fellow sentient beings into existence in agriculture. So whether you're a diehard vegan or a diehard meat eater, we hope there'll be something that resonates with you in this discussion. As with all of our content at Antinatalist Advocacy, we simply ask you to engage with an open mind and to show kindness in the comment section. Anyway, without further ado, I bring you episode 8 of the Antinatalist Advocacy Podcast with Ash Wickety. Enjoy. Welcome everyone to episode 8 of the Antinatalist Advocacy Podcast, and welcome to you, Ash Wickety. It's great to have you with us.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Great. So, well, with every podcast, I just start by asking our guests to introduce themselves. So yeah, tell us a bit about yourself, Ash.
Right. Some of you may know me as Ash Wickety on social media, particularly Instagram and YouTube. I'm 36. I live in the United States, specifically in Minnesota. I've been vegan since 2011 and an animal rights activist since 2015. I help run a grassroots animal rights organization. I'm a vegan mentor with Animal Activism Mentorship, or AAM. Highly suggest following them if you don't already. They have a ton of great content on their YouTube channel as well. And then most of my travel the last couple of years has kind of been around doing animal rights activism, weeks of action and different places in the United States, which is really cool to get to meet other activists and bounce ideas off each other. And oftentimes there are a lot of antinatalists within the group as well, people that I never knew were antinatalists because they don't really speak out about it. So that's always cool. And I love animal sanctuaries. I'm a very big proponent of supporting sanctuaries. I love visiting sanctuaries. So yeah, I guess that's the main gist.
Great. And you're also quite heavily involved in Stop Having Kids as well in Minneapolis.
Yeah, I was doing...
Tell us a little bit about that.
My friend actually started Stop Having Kids, Dietz. And for those who don't know the story, basically he got a mask made that said Stop Having Kids, you know, during COVID when masks were basically required everywhere. Mm-hmm. And he was very surprised by the reaction that it received, positive reaction. And he's like, this could be a thing. And he was an animal rights activist, still is, but had been for many years. So his activist mind got thinking, like, how could we turn this into maybe a movement to further get the word out there and talk to people about this very important issue. And so before Stop Having Kids officially started, he had created a couple of antinatalist banners. So we had gone out and held them. And again, I was pretty surprised that the public reaction was quite positive. So when he said he wanted to go all out and create signs and literature and a website, I was all in. I said, this is such an important message. I'd be happy to help spread it in any way possible. So yeah, I organize a group here in Minneapolis. So it's been really fun. I wish I did more of it, but time only allows for so much, but happy to get out there again.
Definitely. And you mentioned vegan since 2011. When and how did you become an antinatalist?
Oh, gosh. You know, it's hard to pinpoint because I didn't even know there was a term for it. I know that.
That's pretty common, I think. People have those thoughts and then they're like, there are people out there and they're like me and they're called antinatalists.
Right. And it's cool to find people who don't know the term yet. And then you talk about it and they're like, that's what I am. And it just kind of clicks. But yeah, I knew that when I was probably 22 that I definitely did not want to have children. I was dating somebody who had a child and it really opened my eyes to so many things. The emotional investment was a big one and just prioritizing time and things like that, like always having to worry about somebody's safety and well-being is a lot. And then also you have to really plan your life around that person. And so I knew that I didn't want to have kids. And then as I went vegan and started to learn more about the world, I realized that it's not ethical to bring more people into this mess that our species has created and continues to perpetuate and make worse. And so, yeah, I think it was probably a handful of years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, when I learned of the term antinatalism. And I don't even know how I heard of it. Maybe it was actually from Dietz, the founder of Stop Having Kids, that brought it up. And I was like, wow. I started doing research online, as I do, and I was finding communities of people. And I'm like, there's actually quite a bit of people out there who believe this and they get it. So yeah, it's been cool to connect with like-minded people on that front again, so you don't feel so alone in the world. Similar to veganism, finding these online communities, you may not know people directly around you, but getting to connect online through a screen, whatever, is so helpful in just, you know, normalizing it and not feeling like you're such an outsider in your beliefs.
Definitely. And you say you can remember the first time you met someone who used the term antinatalist. I can remember the first time I met a vegan in person, a whole group of them. And I couldn't believe that there were like six vegans sat around this table. And I've been vegan for 3 years at this point.
And I was gosh.
Oh my God, there are all these vegans around me.
Wild.
I couldn't quite believe it. It was a very strange feeling. And I think people were thinking I was acting weirdly, because I probably was, to be honest. I was just like, I found my people.
Quite a moment. I remember my first vegan that I met too. I was donating plasma and I was reading a book and the phlebotomist was like, oh, are you vegan? And I said, yeah. And I wasn't sure how he was going to react. And he said, I am too. And I was like, no way. And so he recommended the Veganomicon cookbook and just various resources to find out more information. That was really early on. But yeah, it wasn't until years later when I, you know, moved to Minnesota to the Twin Cities and started to meet more people. And it was just such a good feeling being around people who understand you and who introduce you to things that you didn't previously know and encourage you to get active and things like that. It's, yeah, community is so unbelievably important.
Definitely. And I do think that, especially, I think in, obviously vegans are still in quite the minority, but it's not too difficult to meet vegans in person. With antinatalists, I remember when I went to my first antinatalist meetup, and I was like, wow, it is an in-person antinatalist meetup. They're pretty rare, especially compared to the vegan ones. So yeah, it is really important when you do have when you do have those opportunities. And we did obviously we touched upon why you decided not to have children when you were 22. And just before we get onto how you became a vegan, that would have been, if not mistaken, just a year or two afterwards. So quite soon after deciding not to have kids.
Yeah, it was actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was 24, 25.
Do you think the two were connected at that point?
I don't actually.
Interesting. Because the two do tend to align in a lot of
people. Absolutely. It's, yeah, there's so many things that I'm just shocked that I didn't realize sooner than I did.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty common, but yeah, I don't think they were connected, but now they're very much so.
Definitely. And how did you become a vegan?
I was starting to really get into watching documentaries, and this was back when Netflix would mail you the DVDs. And back in the day. And I got Earthlings, and I was like, you know, if I'm going to be eating what I'm eating, who I'm eating, then I should probably be more informed and see the process and educate myself a little bit. And about 10, 15 minutes into it, I was just sobbing. I was beside myself. And my partner at the time was like, we're turning this off. And I said, no, like, even if I'm not watching every second of it, I can hear it. And that's, it obviously had a huge impact on me. I did make it through the film and I immediately went vegan. And at that point, I didn't even really know much about veganism. I didn't know other vegans. Yeah. It's not something I had like read about. And so I just immediately dove into research. I mean, that next day, thankfully I had off work. So I was online. I went to the library and a bookstore. I got myself a huge cookbook, 1,000 vegan recipes. That thing saved me. I was so clueless. And then I got, I think it was The Idiot's Guide to Living Vegan, and just read that book all the way through. And yeah, I remember 2 weeks in feeling so good. And I was like, is this because I'm excited and I'm educating myself and I'm making positive changes and I'm actually eating the right amount of fruits and vegetables that we should be eating? But it's just continued, you know, I felt great. And I guess what I didn't expect back then was all of the pushback. I'm learning these new things and I'm excited. So I'm sharing it with coworkers. And I quickly learned they don't want to hear it because it makes them feel guilty that they're, you know, making choices that maybe aren't so ethical. And I can't believe that, you know, 12, nearly 13 years later, I'm still getting a lot of the pushback and the same arguments, you know, ones that we all are familiar with, protein still being one. I'm just like, how is this even still a thing? There's so much information out there about where protein comes from. And yeah, it's wild. But yeah, like most vegans, I think my only regret about going vegan is that I didn't do it sooner. And I think that people make it into a bigger thing than it has to be. It doesn't have to change every aspect of your life. You know, I personally dove right in, and I kind of recommend that, like, just cut it all out and force yourself to adapt. And that's not feasible for everybody. So, I mean, if you do need to take your steps, whatever's going to get you there, I think is important. I used to kind of be a little more hardcore, like no baby steps, but I'm just like, whatever works for you, whatever gets you there is what matters. And I just keep learning more and more ways that humans exploit animals. And it's shocking to me. You know, I thought I'd heard it all, and here I'm still learning things. And, you know, I would be willing to bet most people would say that they are against animal cruelty, but most contribute to it. But we're so far removed from it, we don't have to face it. So it's, you know, out of sight, out of mind, and ignorance is bliss type of thing. And I just can't live that way. Once I know something and know that I can be doing better, I want to try my best to do better. So
definitely. As you said, like, in the 13 years since going vegan, the you know, the reasons against going vegan, that they haven't necessarily improved. What do you think are the, what would you say are the strongest arguments for going vegan?
I would say kind of the golden rule, you know, treat others how you would want to be treated, and others does include other animals. You know, if you don't have to cause harm to somebody, why would you choose to? Even if you're not the one directly inflicting that harm, you know, your purchase is causing someone else to have to do your dirty work, you know. And I don't
like a hitman. So and if you pay for a hitman, you go to jail for murder. You might not have pulled the trigger, but you are morally culpable for what you've done. And then that really dawned on me. So I'm not personally holding the knife, but I am.
Morally,
it's no different.
And I think so many people wouldn't be able to personally torture, experiment on skin or kill an animal. Yeah, definitely some people have their wood and it wouldn't faze them. But I think that most wouldn't be able to actually do that. So Why is it okay to have somebody else do it for you?
Definitely. And I think the golden rule is such a good argument, because it's really, really simple to understand. I do worry that sometimes even arguments for veganism and antinatalism, people kind of over-intellectualize them a bit.
Yeah.
And if your goal is to win somebody over, I don't think you should ever be dishonest. But I ultimately do think you should try and use arguments that, you know, will resonate with your audience. And totally. Something like the golden rule as an automatic appeal. Like, people get it straight away.
It does get much more simple.
Definitely. And that's before you get into, like, people can talk about the environment, or if they eat, you know, like a healthy whole foods plant-based diet. And I'm saying this, I've just eaten a bunch of vegan cheese. I'm not kidding myself that I am one of these people. But, you know, some people might make like the health arguments for not eating animals and this kind of thing. But yes, I personally prefer to break it down into really simple to understand ethical arguments, like the golden rule. And that, as you said, you just don't need to.
It's unnecessary, especially today.
Yeah. But what do you think? So those are, I agree, the golden rule for me is one of the strongest arguments for veganism. But what do you think are some of the best arguments against veganism that you've heard in the 13 years? Now, we're not going to say, plants feel pain, and, if you don't eat meat, you're going to die. And in my case, soy gives you boobs and all this kind of thing. We're not going to go for those arguments. But what do you think are some of the best arguments against it?
That's tough, because I don't really think that there are any arguments against it, especially like for me personally. I don't think that my life has more value than somebody else's. So I would rather just not exist if it would allow somebody to continue their life. And I don't know if it's really an argument, but the only response that I've heard against veganism that I really didn't have an answer to was that they just simply didn't care. They didn't care about the animal suffering. They don't care about the environment, their health, all the corruption involved in the animal ag industry. They just simply don't care. And for that, I don't have anything to say back. I think it's honest. I appreciate honesty. I think it's sad and unfortunate, but I don't have an argument against it.
Yes. And I do think that you can value the honesty. They haven't, you know, this isn't someone who's convinced themselves that they can't go vegan. That,
right.
You know, even though I can afford to eat steak and drink alcohol and go and get meals at a restaurant and go on holiday, I can't afford to eat rice and beans and be a vegan. When people make those kind of arguments, or they say, oh, well, you know, being vegan isn't super healthy, and at the same time, they're, again, drinking alcohol, maybe not exercising, they're doing things which aren't optimal for their health. So even if it was the case that being vegan wasn't optimally healthy, they're not being optimally healthy in their life. You don't see an evidence from them that they care about being optimally healthy. I do think I just don't care. It's not, again, I don't think it's a good argument, because someone could justify, you know, inflict harm against them or their loved ones and say, I'm sorry, I just don't care about doing that. But I do think that it is, appreciate the honesty. And I was thinking about this as well, because it's hard to tell, like, when people talk about most antinatalists, or that, it's hard to talk about the antinatalists as a community. We're quite an under-researched group. We're a very online group. So I think it's quite hard to make assumptions. But certainly in terms of the spaces that I've been in, I get the feeling that the majority of antinatalists eat animals. And again, I think that there are, beyond the standard excuses for not going vegan, again, as we've all talked about, too mm-hmm. expensive, lions, I need my protein, this kind of thing. Have you heard any arguments from antinatalists? These aren't necessarily saying that we shouldn't go vegan, but that veganism and antinatalism are separate.
You know, I am a bit limited. It seems like most of the antinatalists that I know and communicate with are vegan. So I guess I'm kind of lucky in that regard. Although, I mean, I would love to meet other antinatalists who aren't vegan. And, you know, and I love talking to vegans who aren't antinatalists to kind of pick their brain a little bit and encourage them to think a little. And maybe they bring up things that I hadn't previously considered. So yeah, I don't know that I can really speak to that. Recently, I did see a comment online. Somebody said that antinatalists should, you know, we should be okay with humans procreating because we need to take care of other animals suffering first. And if all the humans disappear, which again is just not going to happen like anytime soon, you know, no one will be there to take care of these animals, many that humans have domesticated and can't survive on their own. And yeah, I saw somebody bring that. That might have been on like a Stop Having Kids Instagram post. But I'm like, that's just such a vast issue. And I don't have faith that humans are going to do more to reduce the suffering of other animals. We already kill, when you include sea life, trillions of individuals every year. And I don't think that a growing human population is going to make that any better. So I think that's...
Yes. For me, that's probably the strongest argument that I've heard against antinatalism. And that's the idea that if all humans go extinct, then the wild animals would be eating each other alive and ripping each other apart and this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I do think that if that would be an ethical concern, if... I don't know, I could press a red button and make everyone go infertile. And then I'd be like, oh, we've only got a generation or two to solve the wild animal problem. But that's, as you said, that's just not going to happen. And it doesn't really make sense for an antinatalist to, in the sake of not of, of sentient beings not coming into existence, to have children. Like I've said a scenario where I would tell my kids, look, I'm an antinatalist, and what I'm doing, I'm having you children because I'm hoping that you're going to destroy the environment enough, you know, build a big old car park, and then the wild animals won't be alive to eat each other. Like, I don't know if that's the best way of propagating antinatalist ethics. Probably a good way of making my kids resent me to say that I didn't want to create you. I'm just really hoping you're going to trash the environment and stop the wild animals being born.
I do think that
is a good argument against human extinction in practical terms, but again, we're a long, long way from that.
Absolutely.
I'm not too worried about that. I guess with antinatalists, what I often hear is it's like a definitional argument, and I guess I hear this from non-vegans and other spheres. Maybe I don't know if left wing is the right term, but kind of non-vegans who care about social justice, they might say like, well, animals aren't in this category. We're talking about justice here and animals are irrelevant. They're kind of excluding them from the category. And I think something similar happens with antinatalism, where they say antinatalism is about people not having children. That's what it's all about. Mm-hmm. So veganism, a moderator of a very large Facebook group described it as an irrelevant lifestyle choice.
Wow.
And I just think intellectually, I really can't see any justification for that view.
Mm-mm. No.
I can't see why, if especially seeing as humans live better lives on average than animals in slaughterhouses.
Right.
And I was saying the other day to someone, like, if I had 10 children, that would be I'd be a pretty prolific breeder if I had 10 kids. But your typical non-vegan in the Western country will eat thousands of animals over the course of their life. Like, they will breed thousands of animals into existence. And again, those animals will almost certainly live worse lives than my 10 kids.
Right.
So you just have to ask, if it's immoral to create those people, how does the logic not extend to other animals? And I just haven't come across that good argument. It's just people say antinatalism by definition excludes animal, excludes non-humans. And I don't see how the logic doesn't transcend the species barrier. I don't really know what's going on there. Have you encountered that kind of argument before?
Not too much, honestly. And I just, kind of going off of what you said, it is surprising because you'd think that if somebody has been thoughtful enough to really consider one philosophy or the other, that it wouldn't be that hard to kind of grasp the opposite. It's interesting. I don't know. I think it just comes down to being pretty simple. I mean, if you don't want to cause harm to others, you're concerned about harm reduction, reducing suffering. I think that it's a pretty clear answer, but other humans never cease to amaze me with their mental gymnastics and inconsistencies and
Yes. And people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. I used to have such mental gymnastics back in the day to justify why I didn't have to care about animals. So I know where people are coming from. And realistically, I didn't have an argument. I was just being, I was saying I don't care or I don't care enough to make a change. That's more comforting to, that's less comforting to me than whatever, you know, pseudo intellectual excuse I could cook up at that particular moment. And I came up with some corkers. but yeah, I guess, you know, as we were saying before, and this is something that we've already kind of touched on, but like, how linked in your mind are veganism and antinatalism?
I think that they are deeply linked. Again, the best way to reduce suffering and even beyond animals, you know, you think about the environment and the terrible impact that humans have had on the environment. So if you're somebody who does claim to deeply care about the environment, why would you be okay with people continuing to add more humans to this mess? So often we see people who are like, well, the future generations are going to turn things around, or, you know, my child could be the one to do whatever it is. Get the plastic out of the ocean, cure cancer, you know, all these things. And it's like, you have no idea what that child is going to be like. And they could very well contribute to the very thing that you are working against. I mean, I could not imagine if I had had a child and they ended up being, you know, a hunter, or they would go fishing, or even just your standard animal eater, especially being presented with the facts by being raised by a vegan parent and then going against that. And I have friends who are vegan who have kids who, you know, they, once they get into their teen years, it seems they lash out. And I've had friends tell me some pretty awful things their kids have said, like, oh, I'm off to go kill some fish now, like rubbing it in their face almost. And that would just be extremely difficult. And to know that, wow, because of my selfish decision to procreate, more animals are going to be harmed. And best
that
case
would be scenario. Devastating to me.
Yeah.
That's what I really thought, is that if I created a child, and that child went on to eat animals. And I would hold myself responsible in that scenario, because I did, you know, I can't brainwash my children. I can't indoctrinate them into veganism. Right.
You can educate them as best as possible, show them the way, but who knows whether or not they're going to continue that for themselves. And and even the best case scenario, let's say a vegan does have a child and they grow up and they live a vegan lifestyle. Even then, in most cases, they're probably causing a lot of harm, whether it's, you know, the plastics that they purchase, or the devices that have harmful metals that are being mined by children in other countries, or driving a vehicle and, you know, there's killing insects and other animals. There's just, I don't know. I mean, there are ways to live very lightly on this planet, but I don't think that that's not common, you know. Most are kind of living a standard life. And I mean, even I try to live very minimally, and I know that I still cause harm, and I do drive a vehicle, and I have a lot of guilt about that. And I hate that I have to live with that, but for many reasons, I don't see a smart way around that. So it's like, trying to do the best we can, but knowing that, hey, we're still kind of part of the problem, but it's also in a way not our fault because we didn't ask to be created and we didn't consent to this existence. So yeah, it's tough. You know, if you're a deeply feeling person, this is a really tough world to live in.
Yes. And that does remind me of another antinatalist argument that I have heard against veganism, which is that even if you go vegan, you are still going to cause harm because you're going to drive, your plastics are going to end up in the ocean, this kind of thing. You're going to tread on ants as you walk down the street.
Yeah.
Therefore, the argument goes that we shouldn't be focusing on veganism as a priority. We should be calling for people to become antinatalists. What are your thoughts on that argument?
Yeah, I think I have, you know, seen that online. And for me, it's like, again, going back to if I know that I can do better in some regard, I'm going to do that. You know, again, I wouldn't want to kill an animal personally, so I'm not going to pay someone else to do that. It seems pretty simple to me. And, you know, I don't have these wild expectations that going vegan is this magical cure to living a perfectly ethical lifestyle. But it's definitely better than not doing anything. You know, imagine if, you know, vegans are, I think, 1% of the US population, but imagine if all of us were like, yeah, we're only one person, like we can't do anything. It's like, no, there are vegans, in particular activists, who are making change for animals and who are helping, you know, even if it is small scale, it has ripples and it encourages, you know, more animal friendly laws and different things to be passed. So I don't know. I think it's definitely worth it still, even if you can't have achieved perfection. I think it's still very much worth it to do what you can.
Definitely. And I would very much, you know, for that kind of reasoning could justify me killing a random person, you know, like,
right.
It would do. You know, you say, well, I can't avoid walking on ants as I walk down the path. Therefore, I'm going to drive a lorry through a school playground. It's like, no, like, and this is the great thing about veganism, I think, is that, especially as it applies to food, like, yes, there are some plant foods that cause quite a lot of harm, even to animals. For example, almonds, where lots of bees are bred into existence, the almond industry, industrial almond industry, which is why I personally avoid almond milk. But I don't think there's like a really simple message around veganism. It's like nothing that comes from an animal, really easy for people to get. And it is a massive harm reduction. As you said, it's not a magic pill. It's not the perfect be all and end all. But yeah, I think it is a really simple rule and something that we can do.
Mm-hmm.
I did mention earlier that sometimes it's easy to over intellectualize the arguments, the ethical arguments around eating animals and having children. But I'm going to do that right now. And that is, my first question is going to be, I think I know your answer to this one. Do antinatalists have an obligation to be vegan?
I almost want to say yes straight away, but I guess it also depends on somebody's reason as to why they are antinatalist. Most antinatalists that I know and have spoken to are antinatalists because they want to reduce suffering. And so if that is the reason, then I do think it would only make sense that they would also live a vegan lifestyle. So yeah, I don't know other common reasons that people are antinatalist. I mean, like I said, I have a very small amount of antinatalists that I know in real life, and I don't get too in-depth, you know, on Reddit or anything like that. So I'm sure that there's other reasons, but yeah, I would say if it's because of suffering and harm reduction, that it only makes sense to be both.
No, definitely. I think if it's like a moral thing for you, of course, there are some antinatalists who just really don't like kids. And it's like, fair enough. You do you. I wouldn't consider you an antinatalist necessarily in the moral sense. But it's not up to me to say who gets the label and you're not a real antinatalist and this kind of thing. But yes, there's the boring answer to say, well, everyone has an obligation to be vegan. But yes, I think if you're an ethical antinatalist because you're against bringing suffering into the world, I think that's a really, a really obvious way of not doing it. As I was saying, like, You breed far more animals into existence than you do children, in all likelihood, and those individual animals live far worse lives than your children will. But on the other hand, do you think that vegans have an obligation to be antinatalist?
Yes. It's such a massive gamble to have kids, and you don't know what kind of person they're going to be and the harm that they're going to cause. And like I said, even if their kid is vegan, they're likely going to cause harm to others. So it's just and it's just interesting too, because most vegans promote like adopt, don't shop when it comes to dogs and cats and other animal companions that we have. But then it seems like it's totally lost on them that we happen to have, just in the United States, nearly 500,000 kids in the foster care system. It's like, why, if we can't care for those who are already here and existing, what sense does it make to create more people and add to the problem? I mean, it seems to lack a lot of compassion, and it's just wild to get pushback from vegans. I mean, Stop Having Kids has tried to get into several VegFest events to set up a table, because definitely see the link between the two philosophies. And there's been one instance where Stop Having Kids was approved to be at an event, and then they got backlash from vegans on social media. And so they said, I'm sorry, like, we can't have you do this. So then the one activist who lived there, this was in Canada, she went and stood outside with signs, and it sounds like quite a few people were pretty nasty to her. And it's disheartening too, because as vegans, you know, we want people to hear us out and have an open mind, consider what we're saying, and let's have like a calm, logical discussion about it. But I've seen vegans just shut it down when it comes to antinatalism. They don't want to talk. They don't want to. They do exactly what animal eaters do when we try to approach them about something. So it's just.
Yes. And the arguments sound very similar. Like the arguments really do. It's my personal choice. You're judging me. Who are you to say this about my personal choice? And this kind of thing.
Yeah. It almost makes me laugh in a sad way. But like, they're acting the same way that people that they make fun of act.
Yes. Although I do have, and this is one of my spicier antinatalist takes, because in a sense, you know, again, like the boring answer to do vegans have an obligation to be an antinatalist would be to say, well, yes, I don't think that anyone is justified in creating new beings, at least in a vacuum. But there is an argument, and I am sympathetic to this argument, that, as we said before, humans are not going to stop procreating overnight. So I do wonder, in terms of our activism as antinatalists, whether we should target vegans. Because if we acknowledge that some people will exist in the future, and those parents will try, either successfully or unsuccessfully, to pass on their values to their children, I do want some of those future people to be vegan. And it's a really interesting one, because you said something earlier that I picked up on, and that was that once you had the realization of what was happening to animals, you felt like you couldn't live with knowing what was going on, like it wasn't you as a person. And I don't know what it is about people that causes them to make sacrifices to be ethical, if that makes sense. Like, I don't know whether it's like nature or nurture. This is a really tricky. It's a really tricky one, because I don't believe that, you know, vegans or antinatalists or people who donate a lot of money to charity, people who do make sacrifices to do good, you know, I don't think they're necessarily better people as such, but there are some people who for some reason just more likely to make those decisions. And so I do worry that if we as antinatalists focus our activism towards vegans, we might unintentionally lead to having fewer vegans in the future. Because if it is nature or nurture, if the vegans aren't raising some of the next generation and they're all raised by non-vegans, I do worry about there being fewer ones. But that is a real, that's one that messes with my head.
Humans are such a mystery in so many ways.
Yes.
But it's also interesting because I feel like most of the vegans that I know weren't raised by vegan parents. And despite them being vegan for however many years, their parents still haven't made the change to be vegan.
Yes.
So I find that kind of interesting too.
Yes. It's not necessarily that I think veganism would be an inheritable trait, but whatever trait, or even if it's just a matter of upbringing, that causes someone to act in that way. Like, I don't know what it is. Again, we're really going deep into psychology and what motivates people and all this kind of things. But I guess that's maybe one thing that I would say. I do, on the other hand, I do believe that it's a good idea for vegans to target antinatalists and say, come on, antinatalists, you should go vegan.
Yeah.
Because, again, it's completely aligned with antinatalist ethics. I don't know necessarily if we want everyone to be antinatalist, if we recognize they're not going to be, I don't know if we should necessarily target vegans with our antinatalist activism. But yeah,
it's hard to say.
It's something that runs around my head. That and the having children to stop the wild animals being born. Again, I don't personally think, if you're listening to this, I want to make this clear. If you're listening to this, I don't think it's the best idea to have children in the hope of A, them indoctrinating them with veganism, or B, them trashing the environment to stop the wild animals being born. I think if you want to do good in the world, there are other means of doing good, such as donating money to charity, activism, etc., that don't have the huge risk that comes with having children, let alone what that would mean for your children, your children's children, etc. But yeah, I guess in answer to the question, I guess I would say that I think antinatalists have a stronger obligation to be vegan than vice versa.
Yeah.
But there I go, over intellectualizing.
It's so, one of the things, though. I hope that some people will weigh in, whether on the comment section of this or email or whatever. I love to hear different people's thoughts and perspectives so I can broaden mine and question my beliefs too.
Yes, and those arguments about wild animal suffering, etc., they are coming from vegans. They are coming from people who have made the commitment to not eat animals, have shown like a real, demonstrable concern for suffering. So I kind of take them a bit more seriously than someone who's like, I'm eating the burgers because it might increase overall utility on some score, which I'm not particularly sure about. I guess we've talked about, and I was going to come back to the experience you were talking about with the antinatalists not being allowed into VegFest. I think it's fair to say we're on the same page in terms of and combining antinatalism and veganism in antinatalist spaces. Because it's just, I'm just being like, come on, like, what are you missing? Like, please, if you're against creating, bringing suffering into the world, like, what are you missing? Mm-hmm. Do you think, and I'm not saying that I agree with this, because, again, I think the vegans should, in theory, be open-minded, and you said listen to them. Do you think that there is an argument to be made that, given that antinatalism can be seen as very off-putting, or people might associate it with child hatred, or just general negative perceptions around antinatalism. Do you think that there is an argument for keeping antinatalism out of vegan spaces because it might put off the non-vegans who are going to that space, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I can totally understand the argument for keeping them separate. In doing street outreach, I'm interacting with many people who are not vegan and are not antinatalist, but sometimes veganism will come up. And I don't like force it. If it seems to come up naturally, or I'm speaking from my personal experience, I'll say, I'm somebody who really cares a lot about reducing suffering, which is why I live a vegan lifestyle. And, I don't try to like push the vegan message on them, just kind of sharing from my own experience and perspective. But yeah, given that it does seem like there's a lot of vegan hatred out there in the world from non-vegans, I almost think it's best to just kind of keep it separate.
Yes.
Even the Stop Having Kids website used to have a page, Vegan Antinatalism, but it was taken down because it's just like, it's already such a quote unquote out there message for many people. So why add in veganism when there's often a poor public perception about it anyway? Because then some people might see it and be like, oh, they're vegans, and then just write it off altogether. And obviously we don't want that. So yeah, I'm not going to keep it a secret that I'm a vegan, but I'm also not going to be advertising it, I guess. Yeah, I think it could stand to do potentially more harm than good than to try to integrate it.
Yes. I think that's a shame. I do think in general, when it comes to social issues, it's a good idea to build a broad base of support behind a social issue. And I do think that it probably pays to focus on that one issue and bring people together. You know, like I'm saying about having veganism and antinatalist spaces being a good thing. And I do really agree, because again, I really don't see how the ethics are separate. Mm-hmm. But for something like Stop Having Kids, for, as you said, Gen Pop, people who've not heard, they're not antinatalists, they're not vegan, they haven't heard these arguments before, I can definitely see the merit in keeping veganism separate, not denying that, you know, there are huge connections. And as you said, most of the activists will be vegan. But I can see an argument for not making that front and center, in the same way that when I was doing vegan outreach, although I think there are massive connections between veganism and antinatalism, I wasn't talking about antinatalism to people. Again, I wouldn't lie to people. If it came up, it came up.
Yeah.
But I think there probably is a lesson in trying to keep, you know, build broad bases of support by not bringing in related but still separate issues. And that's a tough one, because again, I think the overlaps are obvious, but again, I think building a broad base of support is really important. And that's why I'm not one of those people who says, you're not a real antinatalist if, or you're not a real vegan if, because I've seen enough of that in those spaces. It really doesn't help. So I don't think that's the way to go. Sorry?
And people can change their mind. I mean, there's people who are vegans who may have kids, and then years later, they realize that, wow, it's actually probably not ethical to, like Danny Shine, I often think of him, you know?
Yes.
He has kids, and people like to like try to give him shit for that. And it's like, yeah, I wasn't always vegan, but there came a point where I had some realizations, and then I like adjusted accordingly, you know? So I try to give people some grace, like, hey, if they're not willing to receive the message right now, maybe later on something will click to them and they will get there.
Yes.
So I think that's important.
Definitely. I don't see an argument for being mean to people about it, for sure.
Yeah.
Because I really do. I do worry that I think vegan spaces, like with any social movement, vegans can argue amongst themselves like nobody's business. But I do think that vegans are quite good at recognizing that you're not necessarily a bad person, even if you're doing a lot of harm. Mm-hmm. And I think that antinatalists, especially younger antinatalists who haven't had children, they can other parents, because they're like, well, I never did that.
Yeah. It's
including a parent like Danny Shine, who's now one of the world's most famous antinatalists.
Yeah.
And I think that's really unfair. Whereas with vegans, it's like, okay, this person eats animals. I used to eat animals. I don't think that I was some horrible, evil person who just loved hurting animals in the same way that this other person is not that right now. So yeah, antinatalist is just a cool, especially for antinatalist parents, because it's hard enough to admit that you've done something wrong that you can't undo. And you don't want to. You love your children. You don't want to undo it. Mm-hmm. It's a really difficult thing. And I have so much admiration for antinatalist parents. And I do think with veganism, fortunately, people can recognize that the people, you know, the people on the other side aren't evil. even if they're doing a lot of harm. They're not irredeemably bad people. Absolutely. So yeah, I think that was a bit of a tangent. I can't remember how we got onto the topic of changing minds and this kind of thing. That was right. We were talking about being in different spaces and not wanting to kick people out of certain spaces and this kind of thing, because you can definitely change minds. And we did actually have a bit of an issue with a London antinatalist space, which had antinatalists on the title. Most people in that group are vegan or at least vegetarian. Some people are not, but this is an antinatalist space. This is not a vegan space. And I do not think, which there's a disagreement with one member of the group, that we should be trying to ban people from that specific space, because it's not fair. And as you said, maybe they'll change their mind. They're going to hang out with a bunch of vegans. They're not going to do that if we kick them out of space.
Exactly. This is how I feel with animal rights too. I mean, the animal rights organization that I'm a part of, we encourage and welcome non-vegans, and it's hard because not all of the already vegan volunteers feel so comfortable with that. But it's like, for anybody who follows Jake Conroy, the Cranky Vegan, he really puts it out there that we don't need more vegans per se. We need more activists, because if people are getting active, like for example, we have a pet store campaign trying to, you know, break up the puppy mill supply chain. And from that, we get people who are very passionate about dogs and anti-puppy mill, but they're not vegan. So they come in, they join the protest, they're out there advocating, helping us get legislation passed. And by doing that, they're one, doing great work, but two, they're around a lot of vegans. So they're learning things that they'd never have considered before. And maybe they're going out to eat with vegans and they're getting to try new things. It's that exposure, you know, it's so to just cast them out and be like, well, they're not vegan, I don't want them here. And same with antinatalism. It only stands to just, you know, do harm. You're not going to encourage somebody to make a positive change by making them feel unwanted.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, we've discussed like arguments for keeping antinatalism and veganism separate. I do think that it does depend on the particular space that you're in. So with antinatalist philosophy spaces or antinatalist activist spaces, I think veganism definitely has a place, because again, if you want to, I don't see how the philosophy doesn't track to animals, and if you want to not bring suffering into the world, go vegan. But general antinatalist spaces, it shouldn't be that there is like a ban on veganism, but as we're saying, we don't think that you should be banning people from the group who aren't. Like, if you want a vegan antinatalist space, say it explicitly, but I don't think you need to be
banning such people. Small groups in both regards.
Exactly. Really don't need to further divide ourselves.
Yes.
So I think I'm noticing a difference between the two of us, in the sense of, it seems to me that most of the antinatalists you meet are through vegan outreach. Is that, well, not through vegan outreach, they're fellow vegan activists. Is this, would this be the fair thing?
That's true.
So I was going to ask about your experience of talking to antinatalists about veganism. But you said you might not have that much experience.
I really don't. Like, I feel really lucky, because most of the people that I spend my free time around are vegans. And so inherently,
Yeah, I've definitely had some mixed experiences. Again, I've got down here like what works and what doesn't work. Shaming people doesn't work. Sometimes in a fiery argument, if someone's trashing veganism, you might think, oh, well, if I could fire back and it might convince people. I'm not really sure that's the right case. But yeah, I've definitely had a lot of pushback from antinatalists in online spaces about veganism, saying you need to keep this out of here and this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Which again, I totally get. I was an anti-vegan at one point, so I understand where it comes from. I don't think they're bad people, but frustrating. I don't think they're justified in their views. And we've talked a little bit about your experience of talking to vegans about antinatalism. Obviously, you mentioned that there have been some negative experiences and vegans making the similar kind of excuses that animal eaters will make. Mm-hmm. But in general, would you say that vegans are more warm to the idea of antinatalism than the general public?
Yes, I do think that's true. And one thing I did want to mention too that I find really mind-boggling, I have several vegan friends that I've spoken to about antinatalism, and they get it. They totally get it, but they still want to have their own kids someday. Yes. And I'm just like, how does that work? Like, how? I mean, maybe I'm lucky and I've never personally felt this biological urge to procreate.
Yes.
But I just don't understand. I have a hard time understanding how somebody can say that they get it. They can't disagree with anything that you're saying, yet they still want to go ahead and see what their own creation would look like and have that experience. And
yes.
Have you come across that? People who get it, but they still
think,
oh my gosh.
I have. And it's an interesting one, especially when they are vegan, because they've already made sacrifices. They've gone against the norm for an ethical position.
Right.
And they've decided to make a sacrifice to live in accordance with their values. And so if they agree with you on the values, it is strange to then watch them make what I would consider to be an unethical decision. I guess in their defense, you know, when you watched Earthlings and you saw the slaughterhouses, you don't have the same experience of having children. You know, you might see crying babies, but, you know, they're kind of cute.
Right.
And then they grow up and then, you know, birthday parties of children, and then you look after children. It doesn't have the same obvious, this is wrong, this is violent, this is, you know, even the suffering that humans do go through in their lives, you know, when they're old and they're ill or whatever it might be, you don't have that same connection to the act of bringing them into existence as you do when you're clearly seeing an animal that someone has paid to be there being stabbed in a slaughterhouse. And I think that's where it comes from, possibly. It's like it doesn't trigger the same injustice kind of alarm for me having children.
Yeah. And like
it has started to now when I see, for example, all the children suffering in Gaza. Gaza is one of the world's youngest populations.
Mm-hmm.
And I see all those children that were brought into this conflict. I do start to, I see it to some extent of why would you bring your children into this? But again, it doesn't have that same, even that doesn't have the same thing. It's just, you know, is it, and that in defense of, you know, people who have children, because I don't really like the term breeders. It's a little
it seems to really turn people off, and it has like negative connotations. So I just avoid it.
Yes, there is more to sacrifice by not having children than going vegan. Like right now, the only sacrifice I have as a non-vegan is that I don't buy certain products from the supermarket, and mm-hmm. that's it. If you want children and everyone around you is having children and you've got that biological desire, and you know, you see movies where kids grow, the American dream and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, that, you look at the way
you are
framed.
Yes, you. It does appear that you're giving up a lot more than momentary taste pleasure. So you're giving up more, and the harm is less obvious, I would say. Again, I'm not saying this justifies it ultimately. I'm trying to come from a place of empathy as to why people can get the antinatalist argument, but it still doesn't fire the, doesn't hit them in the same way as other injustices. What are your thoughts?
Too, because there's so much, like if you just look at the news for one day, like you scroll like you go to your local news, I guess depending on where you live it's going to vary a lot, but like living here in the Twin Cities metro area, you know, there's a lot of people, a lot of crime, a lot of awful things that happen, and yes. I just will scroll through like the last 2 days and I'm like, there's so many things I see where I'm like, wow, this could happen to my child if I were to create one. And it just shocks me when people who do particularly people who are faced with a lot of the evils of the world, whether they're doing like investigative journalism or undercover work or, you know, unearthing this deep corruption that's going on. And then they bring a child into a world where they know this is happening. They know that these are like powerful people and there's little to nothing that we can do about it as individuals. And it's like, why would you subject them? Like, if you hope to have a deeply caring child, they are in for such a world of hurt once they grow up and they realize all of the atrocities that occur. I mean, kidnappings, even with like social media and stuff, like the way that some parents put out their child's faces and their schools, private information, it's alarming. It's like people don't realize the risk, or let's say they've heard of these things, but they have this mindset of, well, it's never going to happen to me. And that's so dangerous and like short-sighted.
Yes. And it is. And, you know, this is, we exist. These are risks that we can take for ourselves.
Right.
You know, London is a pretty safe city on the, you know, in the grand scheme of things. But you know, there are definitely still risks if I go to certain parts late at night and this kind of thing. And if that's the risk that I personally want to take for myself, then so be it. But when you're creating a child, you know, you're putting that risk on somebody else. And I think this is an important part of my belief that you don't have to be a bad person to do bad. It's that it's just easier for bad things to happen.
It just is.
Like, you're not, I wasn't a malicious person towards animals. I'm sure you weren't a malicious person towards animals. We both happened to pay for thousands of them to be tortured and killed. It's easy for things to go wrong. Like when you're a kid, you know, people, a lot of people do talk, you know, about how they were bullied at school. And at some time, I say I was bullied at school, but I also bullied people at school. And at the time, I didn't think of myself as a bad person. Easy to inflict harm without necessarily being bad, let alone if you found yourself in an extremely difficult situation where, because of a certain worldview that, again, it wasn't chosen for you, or because of a certain situation that you didn't choose to be in, you could find yourself making a really, you know, some difficult choices. It's very easy to do harm. It's just easier for things to go wrong. This is a really depressing point, I realize.
And that's, so I guess, you said that too, because that's something that I hear a lot, is people think that antinatalists are very depressing or negative. And it's like, I don't think that's true. Some maybe yes, but just because we're shedding light on the actual realities of this world and also sharing statistics. I mean,
yes,
I just read that 1 in 3 people in this country will get cancer in their lifetime.
Yes.
That's alarming. I mean, that risk alone, it's like, okay, so if I have a child, I'm saying, all right, well, they might get cancer, but that's going to be on them to deal with. Or, you know, it's just, there's so many standalone statistics where I'm like, okay, this thing alone would make me feel very unethical to bring another human into this. But then it's like, there's so many. And there's there's so much knowledge out there, statistics, the internet, we have access to so much. We are aware of what's going on, yet people still choose to create people and put them in, well, potentially in harm's way, likely in harm's way at some point.
And this is something that I do think, because obviously before I was bringing up some big picture arguments that you could make for having children, like, oh, the humans disappear and the wild animals take over and they're all hurting each other. Or if I'm not vegan, then who's going to pass, if my kids aren't vegan, who's going to pass veganism down the generations? I do think that ultimately, though, those broader societal concerns are less important than the duty that I owe my children. And I owe my children not to use them as a vehicle for pushing my agenda forward. You brought up what I like to call delayed philanthropy, where people are like, what if my kid's the one that cures cancer? And I'm like, well, you know, I haven't cured cancer. You haven't cured cancer. Why should we put the pressure on your kid, your hypothetical kid, to do it?
Oh my God.
I think, yeah, again, it's obviously a big part of the reason behind antinatalist advocacy is that we are trying to support people to make a positive impact. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, we're definitely not in favour of passing that on to the next generation. It's like, you've happened to find yourself here. If you want good things to happen, you've got to roll up your sleeves.
Absolutely. And it's not easy. You know, it's not easy to make change.
It's not.
And like, this is one thing that especially gets me, sorry, I'm just like going back to a previous conversation, but one thing I did want to mention is that vegans, particularly activists, we many times put ourselves in potentially dangerous situations,
yes,
whether it's documenting or confrontation, things like this. And for me, I have, like, it's unsettling knowing that somebody could come after me, but I also have a sense of peace knowing that I don't have children that someone can go after,
yes,
and try to use as leverage against me or, you know, harm them because of my actions. You know, that brings such a peace of mind. And also, like, again, as an activist and seeing how much of an uphill battle a lot of the things that I've been fighting against are, I would never want to create someone in hopes that they were going to have to trudge through the same bullshit. I mean,
yes,
that just seems cruel in itself to have this expectation that, oh, well, they're going to be an activist and they're going to make positive things,
yes,
happen. That's a lot of pressure to put on someone. That's a lot of expectation. And again, like, asking for a lot of depression actually to head their way, and potential danger too, considering,
yes,
the situations they may get themselves in.
Definitely. And I do think that is something, a really important point that you said, is that, you know, I was joking earlier about indoctrinating my child with veganism. I don't even think it's fair to expect your kid to do good in the world. They're not asked to be here. You expect,
yeah,
them to do these wondrous things that often the people, you know, who are saying this haven't done themselves. I don't know if that's a really,
mm-hmm,
fair expectation to place upon them. But I do have that piece as well, is that I do, it can be easy to look at the news and see all the depressing things that happen in the world. But a key comfort I have is that I haven't brought anyone else into this. I'm not,
mm-hmm,
going to bring anyone else into this. And that is a huge relief for me. As well as... Yes, as you're saying, like, freeing up my capacity to try and do a bit of good to make the world a little bit better. Did you have any final comments on the subject of, you know, links between not eating animals and antinatalism?
I guess final thoughts, comments, just I encourage people to have an open mind if you're,
yeah,
antinatalist but not yet vegan, or vice versa. Just have an open mind. Have, you know, a sit-down discussion with somebody who has some different beliefs than you, and, you know, be honest with yourself too.
Yes.
I think that's really important. And I also just want to encourage people to get active. I mean, there are ways that you can spread the message without having to like go and stand on a street and hold a sign. I mean, you can put up,
yes,
posters, a simple thing of like putting a sticker at a bus stop. I mean, people are hanging out at the bus stop. Maybe they want something to do. They see, oh, what's antinatalism, or, oh, stophavingkids.org. Like, this seems odd. Let me check this out. I mean, people can't know things until they are introduced to it. So,
yes,
just these little simple things. I mean, so many times when I'm, especially when I'm traveling, I love to look at different stickers and things that are up and, you know, learn more about them. Or if I see an interesting website, like, I personally look it up. So I'm assuming others do as well. but yeah, there are easy ways without having to put yourself out there to further spread the message. And I mean, I think that if people are hesitant to speak out about it, try it, like, dip your toes in. I mean, I was nervous to speak out about antinatalism because I'm like, oh my gosh, there's people who probably already think I'm an extremist for being vegan and being an activist,
yes,
and several other ways in which I live my life. But I've been pleasantly surprised with how positively received antinatalism has been, with vegans, with non-vegans, with random people out in the public. You just never know. And oftentimes there are many people who feel similarly, and they're sitting there feeling alone in their thoughts, thinking, oh my gosh, I'm a terrible person for feeling this, or thinking that people shouldn't have kids, or they think they're alone in that. So many,
yeah,
out there have no idea that there's a community and that there's a name for this philosophy. And so, yeah, I just encourage people to spread the message in whatever way you can.
Definitely. Of course, if you want to get active, there will be lots of links to antinatalist advocacy stuff below. Lots of different ways that people can try and have an impact. Is there anything that you're working on or you'd like to signpost people to?
Most of the stuff I'm working on is animal rights related, which I encourage people, like right now, I feel like the anti-fur movement and the fight against foie gras are that's kind of lowest hanging fruit. So if you're vegan and you're not yet active, I encourage you to try to find a group of people who are willing to fight against this, because I just cannot help but think if we all band together on an issue, we have far more likelihood of just doing away with some of these industries. And yes. I'm not like an overly optimistic person. I consider myself very realistic, and I think it's important to have realistic goals. But these two industries are low-hanging fruit, and I think we have a chance of potentially seeing them mostly end in our lifetimes. So get active. Circuses as well. A lot of circuses are moving away from using animals. That's one of our current fights right now. Things don't change unless there's pressure put to these people, and small groups can make a difference. I mean,
yes,
there's an activist out on the East Coast of the US, and he worked to get a fur ban passed in his city and several other things. And this is, I mean, I'm sure he had help from others, but basically one person had this idea and they made it happen, you know, like don't underestimate yourself.
That's amazing.
And yeah, I mean, if you don't want to do antinatalist activism, I encourage people to start finding, local community, whether you just do dine outs and have discussion and maybe find ways to, you know, give back, to volunteer. I think that's really important. As an antinatalist, and with Stop Having Kids, a big part of our message is encouraging people to help already existing life. So volunteering in a wide variety of ways, whether it's helping other humans or other animals, like there's just so many things that we can do to improve, this often depressing world. And we hold a lot of power as individuals to improve life quality, even just for one person would make a huge difference. So yeah, I just want people to get active and network and find like-minded people and make good things happen.
Yeah, and that's such a wonderful note to end on. One thing that you were saying about like the puppy mill and this kind of thing and brooding a broad base, I did see a good bit of news the other day about a ban on dog meat in South Korea.
Yeah, and I was surprised and very happy. Oh,
very happy. And a lot of people who signed that petition, they won't have been vegans. They will have eaten other animals. But right? I'm glad that the activists are able to build that broad base of support. I just think it's one small example. It's a small example. It's obviously going to affect millions of sentient beings in a really positive way. And just one example out of many of the power that individuals can have. Thank you so much for coming on again, Ash. One thing I should have mentioned at the top, actually, and I'll be sure to mention in the intro, you're, of course, on our panel at AAC 23 on building a healthy antinatalist community. And I do feel that we have touched on a few themes today around, like, knowing the purpose of the space and not being too harsh on people, not condemning people as bad people, even if what they do can cause harm and that kind of thing. And we're actually going to be producing a little write-up about after that panel over the coming weeks and months. So yes, I'll link that discussion below as well. Again, thanks so much, Ash, for coming on. And thank you to you, the listener, for listening. Thank you for tuning into this episode of the Antinatalist Advocacy Podcast. If you like what you heard today, please subscribe so you don't miss future episodes. We'd also be really grateful if you could help us get the word out there by sharing this episode far and wide, as well as giving us a positive rating on whichever platform you're listening to us on. To find out more about AA, including careers advice, donation recommendations, and different ways to have a positive impact, you can go to our website at antinatalistadvocacy.org. To keep up to date with what we're up to, feel free to subscribe to our monthly newsletter and follow us on your favourite social media platforms. Links to all of the above are in the description. As always, we are hoping you will join us in our antinatalist advocacy.